my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
It's time for school, but you're not going to be saved by this bell. Established in 2016, Stride Pro Wrestling trainers have put their years of experience to help train the next generation of professional wrestlers. Nearly a dozen students have graduated and are now making a name for themselves, not only here at Stride Pro Wrestling, but beyond. Our athletes aren't locked into any long-term contracts, so if you want to train, use your head and contact Stride Pro Wrestling today. It's training you'll flip for. So kick your future into high gear now.
Hey, friends. Welcome to episode 330 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am your co-host, Kevin Huntsberger. It is Movie Mania, and I apologize in advance. My voice may come in and out as we're recording this. It is the day after Stridiversary from Stride Pro Wrestling. Be sure this week to check out youtube.com/Stride Pro Wrestling, a very intense, crazy show. To say the very least, this show, this podcast will be much tamer by comparison because we're talking cartoons. My good buddy Chad Smart is here. He is, since you don't do the Power Half Hour anymore, I'm going to call you the co-host from the West Coast. I'll steal Greg's moniker for you.
Sounds good. And, you know, if your voice does go out, it just lives up to what I've always said. You have a face for radio and a voice for newspaper.
Yes, that is very true. Very true indeed. So, Chad, we are, I'm excited because we're talking movies. It's Movie Mania. And, you know, we did the first one last month with Wrestling With My Family. And I don't know, what did you think? What were your first impressions of doing the podcast? Because you and Mike DeKalb, your buddy there in California, do Out of Touchstone. And you guys have kind of been the inspiration for starting Movie Mania. And our friend Tom Skull, who has Lights, Camera, Fletch with his son Fletcher. So I kind of wanted to move into the movie genre podcasting as well. What'd you think of doing Movie Mania and kind of sticking to these wrestling themed films?
Well, it's a good, you know, distraction away from the Touchstone Hollywood Disney films that I've been watching lately. And I'm a little disappointed in myself that I didn't do the proper research because the movie Fighting With My Family, which we discussed, is about Paige, mm-hmm. And her family. And it was inspired by a documentary, the name escapes me at the moment. I know it's something similar to Fighting With My Family, yeah. But that is actually available on Tubi, if you have Tubi. Oh. And had I known that, I would have liked to have watched that and kind of compare. Granted, you know, the documentary is more about, I think, her parents, and it came out, I think, 6 years earlier. But I would like to go back and watch that just to see how crazy that family really is.
Well, maybe that'll be a future review here on wrestling or under Movie Mania. I'm looking at the film that we're doing this week, and I guess it's considered a film. It's an animated movie from a genre or from a time period that I absolutely love, and that is Scooby-Doo.
He puts the mania in WrestleMania. He puts the fear in Fearless Warrior. He puts the in this all-new original movie.
Run! Ghost!
A ferocious beast threatens the main event and the world's greatest superstars, John Cena.
You can't see me!
Triple H, Kane, The Miz, Brodus Clay, Santino, Sin Cara, AJ Lee, and Mr. McMahon.
Welcome to WrestleMania!
Team up with a dog.
Bring it!
Who puts the smack in SmackDown. Scooby-Doo, WrestleMania Mystery. Look for it on DVD, Blu-ray, or digital HD. Also look for these other Scooby-Doo mysteries.
Scooby-Doo! Scooby-Doo!
Scooby-Dooby-Doo!
When I was a kid, Scooby-Doo was, outside of Mickey Mouse, Scooby-Doo was the first cartoon character that I really remembered and really kind of resonated with. And at one point in my life, I wanted to grow up to be Scooby-Doo, like the actual cartoon dog, not the voice actor for Scooby-Doo, but the actual dog. I very odd childhood, I guess. But I was excited to watch this film. But when you were a kid, I'm assuming, you know, we grew up in the same time period. Where was Scooby-Doo for you in terms of fandom as a kid?
Yeah, I remember being a big fan of Scooby-Doo. I'm trying to remember, you know, what time it aired, because I know you and I probably both watched the same episodes on KPLR out of St. Louis. And I want to say it was a morning cartoon show, but I could be wrong on that. But, you know, some of my favorites, and it ties in, I guess, to this movie, too, is, you know, especially as a kid, I'd been pre-internet when you couldn't just look things up easily. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize all the incarnations of the Scooby-Doo shows. But my favorites were always the one where they had these celebrity guest stars.
Okay.
You know, like Addams Family or Sonny and Cher or Harlem Globetrotters. And they actually did come out, I think, recently with a new series called Scooby-Doo and Guess Who. And that had some more modern day, you know, guest stars. But yeah, that was my favorite. And then I remember, you know, a pup named Scooby-Doo being on ABC Saturday mornings in around 83, 84. But my question to you as a Scooby-Doo fan and wanting to be Scooby-Doo is, what is your take on Scrappy? Are you pro Scrappy or anti Scrappy?
You know, I liked Scrappy when he came around, and just kind of for point of reference, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You was the original that we probably watched, obviously, in syndication because it started several years before we were born. But and you mentioned all these incarnations, and I don't know at what point Hanna-Barbera introduced the Scrappy-Doo character, but I liked Scrappy. And then it was not until the live-action film with Freddie Prinze Jr. came out that it seemed like there was a lot of hate for Scrappy. So, but I understand it because TV shows will always add that, you know, family ties, growing pains. They always added that extra kid. Remember, you know, it's like, boom, the show is getting kind of boring, so let's throw a baby into the mix, or a new kid, Cousin Oliver, Scrappy-Doo, you know. So maybe that's what Scrappy suffered from, was the Cousin Oliver syndrome, where, you know, you bring in this character to try to spice things up, and it kind of backfires.
Yeah, I living in a world pre-internet, did not realize there was such a backlash to Scrappy until the live action movie that came out. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned Freddie Prinze Jr. because that ties in also with Scooby-Doo WrestleMania, because he used to work as a writer for WWE for, I don't know, a few months at least.
Yeah. And I'm trying to remember, I was listening to a podcast recently, and Freddie Prinze Jr. had I think it was the Kurt Angle podcast, actually. And Freddie Prinze Jr. had something to do with one of the stories going on that Kurt was talking about. And I don't remember what it was, but I guess this would have been a better story had I remembered it. But, you know, when it comes to this whole Scooby-Doo, you liked the ones with the celebrities, you said, and I do remember a lot of those as well. And I think that was kind of where they were going with this Scooby-Doo WrestleMania mystery. And I believe there are a couple of WWE-related Scooby-Doo ones. This one, the WrestleMania Mystery, is the very first. And I think this is the first animated collaboration for WWE films as well. Do you know if that's accurate?
I believe so. Going to do a quick hop in the Google machine. But yeah, they, I know they did a follow-up with Scooby-Doo, and they also did a crossover with the Jetsons and the Flintstones, which I hope we get to at some point on here on Movie Mania. But
yeah, it'll be fun to do that for sure, because you know, like I said, we're both closer to 50 than we want to admit, and we both still enjoy watching cartoons and animated films and wrestling, and it all kind of ties together. And you know, I think the other thing that we like to tell people who are listening to this is where did we watch it? And you signed up and did the Boomerang, which is, I guess, the classic version of Cartoon Network.
Yeah, I have done the 7-day free trial. I may just go ahead. It's like $40 for the year. Mm-hmm. And I know that there, the other WWE films are on there, plus all seasons, I think, of the Smurfs, which I can easily ignore, but also Munchie Cheese and Top Cat, a bunch of classics from our youth. Mm-hmm. So I may just keep it up because, again, if we're going to get to the Flintstones and the Jetsons and the other Scooby-Doo movie, then it's already available, and I can watch cartoons. So
there you go. I ended up getting it. I paid the $3 and rented it on Amazon Prime. I think it's on a couple of different streaming services for a rental fee. So it is out there. It is available. And like Chad said, if you go ahead and subscribe to Boomerang, you can get it and watch it whenever you want. But let's talk a little bit before we get into this specific film. That Hanna-Barbera genre, I mean, to me, Hanna-Barbera was our childhood when it came to Saturday mornings. You had Scooby-Doo and Yogi Bear and the Flintstones and the Jetsons and the Smurfs. I know you didn't like the Smurfs, but there were so many cartoons that were created by or developed by the team at Hanna-Barbera, who were two animators or producers, and just my childhood. I get very nostalgic sitting here thinking about it and talking about it, about how impactful those two guys and their creative vision was on who we are today.
Yeah. I'm actually trying to pull up the list of Hanna-Barbera shows because there are so many. I mean, they were, I'm trying to think of an analogy that I could make to today's cult pop culture, but they really did have the, other than Looney Tunes, Warner Brothers and Looney Tunes, Hanna-Barbera was the other major cartoon provider. And, they have definitely a definitive look amongst all of their programs. Mm-hmm. And, just the list of, we could sit here for the next hour and talk about all of the shows that they came up with. And, if we get really bored or this conversation goes nowhere, maybe we'll do that. But Scooby-Doo, real quick, Scooby-Doo premiered 1969 to 1970 and then came back in 1978 and only had 41 episodes.
Wow.
And that's another thing that, looking at cartoon runs, especially like He-Man and G.I. Joe and our afternoon shows that we would watch, after school, I never realized how few episodes these shows actually had, because you would watch them all the time. And I don't remember, being disappointed if there was an episode that I'd already seen or,
right.
Being that it was just like, hey, I'm going to sit down and watch the show. But yeah, a lot of these, other than the Flintstones.
Why do you think that is? Because look at today's cartoon, SpongeBob SquarePants, South Park, The Simpsons, Family Guy. These shows all started in the late 90s. Well, The Simpsons obviously started in the late 80s, but you have all these shows from, the mid to late 90s that are still on in 2021. I don't understand. You got 71 episodes of the original Scooby-Doo, you said? I mean, that's mind-blowing to me.
41 episodes.
41 episodes, even fewer.
More, so. Yeah.
That's
yeah. Crazy. And again, I don't know where these ran in first run, how often they were on, but, and I think now with the successful cartoons like The Simpsons, Family Guy, it's like, I, I don't know if they're just cheaper to produce, and so networks keep them around longer, or, you know, in the case of South Park, they only do 12, 13 episodes a season, I think. So that, you know, that even though South Park has been around now for like 25 seasons, I think they only have maybe the same amount of episodes that, the Simpsons had done in, say, 14 seasons. So, but yeah, even, yeah, just looking through these, a lot of these shows only lasted 1 year. And I mean, another popular show, Scooby-Doo's All-Star Laugh Olympics, which I'm sure you remember, 24 episodes. Wow. And only ran from 77 to 79. So I just, yeah, I don't know. This would be, I guess, a deeper dive. Maybe we can start up a cartoon podcast to delve into the history of cartoons.
There you go. That might be an idea for the Positive, which I maybe mentioned, Chad Smart, of the Positive Cynicism Podcasting Network, the PCPN. So that may be something to put on the burner for some point. You know, we talked about previously WWE films, and, you know, a lot of times, and I believe this is the same case with this particular animated movie. It was a straight to DVD release. I don't remember this being at the box office. But it's an interesting collaboration, and the story, you know, it's in that same vein of when, you know, the Harlem Globetrotters or Don Knotts or whoever was the kind of guest star on Scooby-Doo came into play. Let me ask you this, though. When you were a kid, did you realize that the characters were, one, supposed to be teenagers, and two, that there were the underlying marijuana references in it? Because I never picked up on it.
You know, probably didn't think teenagers, but probably like early 20-somethings.
Yeah, that's where I would have put them. Even still today, even watching the WrestleMania one, you know, yeah. I still have that mindset.
And yeah, no, it probably wasn't until I was in high school maybe where I realized what Scooby Snacks, why they were always wanting the Scooby Snacks. And you know, is that something that was actually there, or is it something that fans have just populated and created, and so now future, you know, like the Scooby-Doo movie, they play into that fan aspect of it. I don't know. I would have to go back and ask, you know, although it did come out in the 70s, so.
Right. But that was the only, I mean, I don't remember any other cartoon or animated series that has had that kind of reputation, I guess. Because we mentioned the Flintstones and the Jetsons and, you know, some of these other shows that Hanna-Barbera did. But, you know, I guess they had one pet project they could kind of go over the deep end with and maybe have some fun with, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, Scooby-Doo and the WrestleMania mystery, it starts off with, you know, The Miz. And that's what the other thing I liked about this was they used WWE superstar, like this is a true collaboration with WWE and with Hanna-Barbera. I was surprised by some of the, I did recognize the some of the actors who were not WWE superstars that provided voices. Was surprised that Rock was on this particular one. See if you catch my joke there.
Well, yes, not the Rock.
Nope, just Rock.
Just Rock, yes. Charles S. Dutton. I was kind of surprised. And first, I guess we should mention that this movie came out a week before WrestleMania 30. So it came out in 2014 for point of reference, because I'm sure we're going to get into some of the people that WWE stars that are in this one. So kind of point of reference. One of the things that shook me, or didn't shook me, but I felt Shaggy's voice was a little bit off. And then I had to look it up and see that it was actually Matthew Lillard still.
Yeah.
Who was Shaggy in the movies, and then he became Shaggy. I think he just was replaced last year as the voice of Shaggy. But yeah, it didn't sound like Matthew Lillard to me.
I agree. I did notice that as well. And obviously, you know, from our childhood, and I remember being, you know, because like you said, this when we were watching, this was pre-internet, so you didn't look it up, and I didn't sit and watch the credits back then. But when I finally realized that Casey Kasem, who I listen to every Sunday on American Top 40, yeah, the voice of Shaggy, my mind was blown. And so, you know, to me, I think people, they have their favorites. They resonate to certain, you know, to me, Jim Henson is always going to be the voice of Kermit the Frog. And so with Shaggy, even though Matthew Lillard did a fine job in the movies and whatnot, to me, I did notice, and I think Shaggy's got one of those voices that's very distinct that you kind of pick up on. Mm-hmm. But the probably the biggest surprise to me was Mindy Cohn providing the voice of Velma, who, of course, you and I remember from our childhood again as being Natalie on The Facts of Life. I had no clue.
Yeah, I didn't recognize the voice until I looked it up after watching the film.
Yeah, that was surprising. And I think Frank Welker is the only original voice actor, and he was the voice of Fred. Everyone else, I don't know what the status of all the other original voice actors is, but... I know Casey Kasem's status.
Kasem is not...
Scooby-Doo, was he, I'm looking at the list now, that was Fred Welker too. I don't know, was Fred the original Scooby as well?
Frank Welker.
Or Frank Welker, I'm sorry.
I do not know. I would have to do another search and find out that information, who the original artists were. But I'm going to assume that most of them are either no longer available for work or too old that their voices don't sound young enough.
Well, and you know, you mentioned the superstars and I knew this came out in 2014. I didn't realize it was the week before WrestleMania, but I believe also around this same time, this was when the current WWE logo was unveiled. I feel like WrestleMania 30 was when we had I call it the cleaner version. The scratch logo was gone, but in this film, we still had the scratch logo from the Attitude Era that was a part of this film as well.
I think you were correct. Yeah, this is the only movie, I looked in the trivia section, that the only movie that has the scratch logo. Animated film, but going back real quick to the original voice of Scooby-Doo was Don Messick.
Oh yeah, he was Papa Smurf too.
He played Papa Smurf, and he passed away in 1997. So
okay. So Mr. Welker pulling double duty in this version of Scooby-Doo, and you know it starts off with your typical, you know, kind of mystery getting developed. We figure out that there's a bad guy or a monster of sorts, this giant bear that attacks the Miz at the very beginning. But what'd you think of the setting of WWE City with the giant Triple H welcoming people as they came forward? It was cheesy, but you know what? When you're watching, when I watch a movie, and again, we talked about this last time, I'm watching it without any kind of appreciate your study of film. So I'm just watching it as a regular person. And I know you went to film school and you kind of look at some of these other things, but I definitely was going into this ready to suspend belief because of one, it's a film, but two, it's a cartoon. And for Christ's sakes, the title character is a talking dog. So, you know, you can't go into this with a high expectation of reality, especially when it's involving the WWE kind of side of things, in which obviously there is no WWE city, but it is a fun concept that all these superstars kind of live in the same bunkers of sorts and hang out together 24/7.
Well, I'm sure that, you know, if Vince had his way, he would call up Governor DeSantis in Florida and say, can we just change the name of Tampa to WWE city, since a lot of our guys live there, and we have or Orlando, I guess, the performance center. But yeah, I'm surprised that Vince hasn't come up with this idea, you know, kind of like how Disney bought up all the land around Disney World and created its own little city there. So, maybe Vince should have had that foresight. But, you know, my question is, you know, if all your shows are in one place each week, how do you keep the attendance levels up and the interest? Because as we've seen with Impact Wrestling and even NXT being from Full Sail, you know, you get the fans that always come that, you know, start to think that they're part of the company is because they're there. So maybe WWE City's not a good idea in terms of shows, but I just have to say right off from the beginning, the character work of The Miz, I felt was very authentic, that it captured the annoying persona that he had, especially back in 2014. But yeah. But yes, WWE City, you know, you and I would go book our first bromance brocation, especially if Matt Riddle was hanging out.
Yes, I would definitely visit WWE City. I'm looking up some of my notes from that. And I don't want to provide too many spoilers, but as we mentioned, The Miz is, you know, out late at night. And we see Kane as well. And I think they're kind of dropping in some, you know, different characters throughout this to kind of establish what exactly is going on and whatnot. But The Miz, you know, encounters this giant monster bear, for lack of a better word. And, you know, the way it ends, the way that scene ends, I'm wondering, did they just kill The Miz? Like, is this character is he gone from the film? But he provides some comic relief, I think, throughout the rest of the film. So spoiler alert, The Miz is not dead and is actually probably of the WWE characters in this, I think I enjoyed him the most, as far as, like you said, them capturing his annoying persona and just kind of that, those quick little comic shots throughout the hour and 23 minutes of this movie.
Now, I guess I'm just going to talk about other people that are in the, the movie. And as we said, this came out in 2018. I think my biggest surprise while watching this film, because I remember it coming out, but I don't remember too much about the promotion and whatnot. Right. But I'm not going to say the biggest star, but the one who got the most promotion in this is not John Cena. It's not Triple H. It's Sin Cara.
Yes, I'm glad
and you brought it up. I'm sure that they felt that Sin Cara was going to be huge at this time. And not be out of the company within like 2 years and replaced with fake Sin Cara. But yeah, I just found it amusing that he was kind of the central point, and the fact that he doesn't talk at all. John Cena has to translate for him, because I'm pretty sure John Cena learned how to speak luchador from his cousin Juan Cena.
That's true.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing about that too, I noticed it as well, because, you know, John Cena, 2014, that WrestleMania, John Cena wrestled Bray Wyatt, I believe.
Yeah.
So John Cena was not in the championship picture at that point. And I don't even remember Sin Cara being on WrestleMania 30, unless he was
probably in the Andre Battle Royal.
Yeah. But I think the bloom fell off the rose pretty quick with him. The, you know, the poster, of course, has, or the movie cover, if you will, has John Cena and Scooby-Doo in animated form on the cover. But I thought it was interesting that there's an actual two-pack of Scooby-Doo and Sin Cara as action figures, which, you know, Scooby-Doo as a WWE action figure, I probably need to add this to my collection at some point. But I thought that was very cool and very interesting as well, that, you know, like you said, Sin Cara is a pretty big part of this film. But, you know, a lot of times it's been talked about how Sin Cara was kind of brought in to reach that Latino audience and Central America and Mexico, and a replacement for Rey Mysterio, I guess, in some cases, but it just didn't work. And I don't know if it was the lack of him being able to speak English and connect with fans on that level here in the United States, because I think the thing with Rey Mysterio is, he has that crossover appeal here in the United States. Little kids, you know, when my son was into wrestling, his favorite was Rey Mysterio. And then, you know, you're able to then also attract that crowd that watches the Lucha Libre style and whatnot. So I just think that with Sin Cara, there was a disconnect. And I don't think anybody has ever really been brought in and been able to make that bridge or that connection with that Latino audience like Rey Mysterio was able to do.
Yeah, and I don't know why that... I mean, so as we record this, you know, there are rumors that Andrade has asked for his release. Mm-hmm. And he's another one that was kind of brought in with high hopes, and the bloom has fallen off, like you said. And as reading internet, you know, comments, a lot of people are saying that Vince wants the next Eddie Guerrero. And instead of letting someone connect with an audience, like they're trying to force that connection. And same way with, like, I think Sin Cara was, you know, forced, like you said, like, you don't have Rey Mysterio anymore, but here's Sin Cara and you're going to like him the same way. You know, it's like those memes that say, you know, mom, can we get this? Mom's like, well, we have that at home. And it's like two different, hopefully, you know, the memes, otherwise my comment makes no sense, yeah. And that type of thing. Yeah. I think he came in with an expectation that people would just like him because he was a luchador. And, you know, at least even with Ray, had personality. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, even in his early days when he wasn't getting a lot of promo time or whatever, but he just had that a connection. And Sin Cara just never, it felt, I think, a little too gimmicky, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wonder, I would be curious to know from, you know, the creative side of things for this movie, what was it about him? You know, was this kind of that last chance of getting Sin Cara over with the youthful crowd and getting him as part of this, you know, making him part of this movie? And because there's a lot of guys in this film that I was surprised by the voices that you didn't have that WWE star power per se, other than John Cena, Triple H. The Miz was kind of, you know, fluctuating on the card at that point. And like, I don't remember. And we were there at WrestleMania 30, and I don't remember what the Miz did that year either. So,
No, I'm with you. I found it interesting that, like you said, it does have Triple H, Cena, Kane, but they're all kind of small roles.
Yeah.
And then the people that are getting, I guess, the more attention are people like Brodus Clay, Santino Marella, even AJ Lee, who was women's champion, and, you know, she would be gone within the year. But I think all these people were, like, probably gone within the next 18 months after this film came out. And it's just, you know, I don't know, maybe what the recording time was like, so the WWE didn't want to take the bigger stars off the road, or maybe they were doing something else. You know, maybe the Miz was getting ready for the Marine 27. I'm not sure, but yeah, it just seemed interesting. The choices that were made for which wrestlers to promote and which ones you would expect it to be there. But, and I'm kind of disappointed, spoiler, that Bray Wyatt wasn't the bear at the end.
That's true. And we also, we did see, I don't think he had any speaking roles, but you see Sergeant Slaughter in there as well, which...
And Jimmy Hart.
What's that?
And Jimmy Hart.
Oh, yeah, and Jimmy Hart and Jerry Lawler. I didn't know specifically with Slaughter if that was kind of a throwback to the old G.I. Joe and trying to catch a little bit of that nostalgia, or if it was just a coincidence that, you know... Sergeant Slaughter is a pretty memorable and easy character to connect with, I think, on that cartoon level too. So maybe that was part of the rationale with having him in there. But, you know, we talked about it. This giant bear is attacking, and they're trying to WWE, you know, like we said, is WWE City is this giant compound of sorts, and all the wrestlers share cabins, for lack of a better word, I guess. But they're getting ready to host WrestleMania there. And it kind of reminded me of current times, because this to me was like the performance center. You know, they've got this arena. It wasn't in a stadium like WrestleMania has traditionally been. And, you know, you got Michael Cole on commentary alone. It was very, and some of those things, it was kind of like very basic, but they're going to unveil this brand new WWE championship that is under lock and key, and has all this security and lasers and whatnot to keep it safe and keep it protected. But the character that, what was his name? Sugar. I'm saying his name wrong. The Charles Dutton character, Cookie. Not sure. I knew it was something sweet. You know, he's to me, he's kind of the groundskeeper of sorts, or the you know, he wrestled at one time, but he's there to kind of maintain law and order and make sure that nobody gets in there and tries to steal this belt.
And that's, you know, the whole point of at WrestleMania, they're going to unveil this or crown this new champion. And my whole thought was, why does a bear want the title? And I can never figure that out. And then I was trying to think of if there were any popular wrestlers who had the name Bear in their name. And I could not come up with any. So I don't know if you have any off the top of your head.
No. That was kind of the weird part to me, too, was the character of the bear and what, who that was supposed to be or what that was supposed to symbolize. And I think it was just, hey, you know, back in the day, guys used to wrestle bears. So maybe that was the only thing I could kind of piece together with the point of this giant, scary monster bear of sorts. So, and that was the other thing too, is like, was it supposed to be, because it's animated, so you can't tell, but, you know, what did it really look like? You know, was it when they were encountering this thing, were they looking at this as like, oh my God, that's a real bear? Or is this a robot? Or is this somebody dressed up like a bear trying to terrorize? Because the thing was ginormous, at least in the depiction of it throughout the, but again, it's a cartoon. I'm not going to hold the feet to the fire. We're going to kind of go with the story and the throwback and the nostalgia of what is happening with the gang. And of course, along the way, we mentioned the Sin Cara part. Scooby and Shaggy are playing a video game and Sin Cara and John Cena are in it. And then I guess they're, Scooby-Doo emulates the moves that Sin Cara did. And so he wins this contest and they get, you know, you win a contest to WrestleMania, but you don't get tickets for two, you get tickets for five. So of course, Daphne and Velma and Fred are all able to go to WrestleMania as well. And Daphne isn't completely sold on the idea until she meets John Cena, which I thought that part got a little creepy, because now I'm putting it into the context of these are teenagers and John Cena is a guy at that time who's in his 30s. So it was kind of like, whoa, what are we doing here? But, you know, John Cena obviously did not come on to Daphne. Daphne had that schoolgirl crush on him, but I thought that was kind of funny how they played that off.
Yeah, I was one thing that I liked is when they take, because when Scooby and Shaggy say, oh, we won this trip to WrestleMania, can we go? And Fred and Velma and Daphne are like, no, why would we want to go to that? That's dumb. Like, we have other things to do. But then when they get to the show, they're like, oh my gosh, did you? He said, oh, this is awesome. And I don't know about you, but I've taken non-fans to wrestling shows before. And to see their reaction when things happen and let allow themselves to suspend disbelief and just be in the moment. You get that fandom that I think you and I are probably a little too jaded to fully appreciate now. But the whole movie is just, it's can't say it's a great film, a great story, because it is a cartoon and it's Scooby-Doo and whatnot. But I think my biggest issue with the film, and I hate saying issue because that sounds negative, but were you surprised at the reveal of who was behind everything?
You know, and without spoiling it for those who haven't watched, Because I do suggest, especially if you grew up in the 70s and 80s and enjoying Scooby-Doo, or I guess really Scooby-Doo has become timeless, as we just mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. with all the incarnations. Go back and watch this film. It's, you know, it's an hour and 23 minutes, I think, or an hour and 24 minutes. So it's not going to take a big chunk of your time. But like I Snapchatted you, I was surprised by it in one sense. At the beginning, I kind of thought it was one person. And then when it ended up not being that person, because I based it on the logic of what I had told you. And when you go back and watch this, you guys will understand what I'm talking about. But it was like, wait, how, what? And I was trying to remember back, because I don't remember a lot of the reveals from the original series of, you know, I'd have to go back and watch some of those old cartoons to see if it was, you know, to me, there was a giant continuity jump with the reveal. So on that end, I was disappointed, because I thought, no, it's not going to be this person. It's going to be this other person. So, but what did you think?
I was not surprised, because I felt like there weren't enough characters outside the WWE mm-hmm. realm to make you think, oh, is it going to be this person or is it going to be this person? I think like there were only really two people that they kind of set up as being the, you know, the villain. And one of the applying your logic of things couldn't have been who it was. Right. So
yeah,
and, that was a little disappointing.
Yeah. And they had, you know, they did plant some like secondary characters throughout to kind of, I think, make you think that, okay, this could be this person. It could be this person, because I felt like in the original, again, I'm talking being 7 years old and watching these, I felt like sometimes those secondary characters that you didn't expect ended up being the monster or the ghost or whatever it was. But, you know, like they say, the memes today say, you know, the real in Scooby-Doo, the real ghost are always, or the real monsters are real people.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of fits in with that, but, I don't know that we talked yet about Vince McMahon. He had a role in this as well. I feel like they were playing him off as a baby face. You know, he wanted to use Mystery Inc., which I thought was kind of interesting too. You know, would the real Mr. McMahon hire four teenagers and their dog to protect or figure out who's trying to steal his precious WWE championship? I thought that was, I did kind of laugh out loud at that kind of prospect, because I picture Vince McMahon being so disconnected. Like, did he even know who or what Scooby-Doo was at the time of the production for this? So I thought that was kind of fun.
Vince is still probably about 20 years away from discovering Scooby-Doo. So, but yeah, I just think, you know, we mentioned it already. It's like, this is a fun cartoon show that, and I think you Snapchatted me at the reveal and been like, what, this doesn't make any sense. And I fired back with my standard response to you. Anytime you question anything in wrestling, I'm like, wait, you're looking for logic in wrestling and logic in an animated show?
Yeah.
Like, come on. But yeah, you know, speaking of logic, my biggest, I think, takeaway of disappointment in this film is during the big climax battle. It takes place in the ring during WrestleMania, and the lights go out. And I was expecting either The Undertaker to show up, or Sabu, or there to be some surprise, and there's nothing. So whoever wrote this clearly has looked at the book of tropes of wrestling.
Well, you know what it did remind me of, though, the way the lights went out and how it went out kind of like this section and then this section and then this section, and even the sound it made reminded me of the Fiend character that we see today. So maybe this was kind of laying that groundwork for modern day events happening in WWE, since you spoiled it and said that Bray Wyatt was not the giant bear, who obviously Wyatt wasn't even in this film at all. But we had talked before about our rating system, you know, opening match, enhancement talent, it's kind of like the bottom tier. Yeah. A mid-carder, you get that. And then the main event, which, you know, wrestling with my family, we gave that the main event status. What would you give Scooby-Doo and the WrestleMania mystery?
I'd say mid-Carter. I mean, this is a, you know, this would be like an IC title match type film where it's entertaining. It's not great. Yeah, that's what
I agree. I put it in the mid card. You know, I give it points for the nostalgia, obviously, for my love of Scooby-Doo. I felt like the characters, the WWE characters that were in it, because obviously you can't have everybody in it. And the characters that were in there, I thought, you know, they did a fine job. I again, liked the character of the Miz, and I liked, you know, Triple H was, the character was kind of surprising, I thought, in this film, where it wasn't like, he was kind of a minor role in it. I felt like Brodus Clay may have had more of a role than Triple H, for example.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked it for what it was, and it was entertaining. And you know, a quick, and if you have kids, especially, I think they would enjoy this and get a kick out of it. And, you know, maybe we'll go back sometime and watch some more modern or some old school Scooby-Doo and see how it holds up and compares to what we saw. But, you know, last month I did my impression. Was it Dusty Rhodes or was it JR? I don't remember. Was it both of them?
It might have been both. I don't remember.
So, yeah, I was like, well, I feel like we got to keep the consistency going. So, like, Chad, what did you think of Scooby-Doo? Again, my voice is bad. That was a bad Shaggy impression. But
no, that was pretty good. And I'm sitting here disappointed that I couldn't answer you in like in a Scooby voice or even a Fred.
I don't know if you remember, speaking of Scooby voices, our buddy Travis Yates, who also has a movie podcast, the Still Up All Night podcast, his wife, Renee, had a younger brother who was a diehard Scooby-Doo fan. And we were out, this was back in the day when they all still lived here. And we were out one night late and we got to talking and I did a Scooby-Doo impression too. And she's like, oh my God, would you call my brother tomorrow with that voice and talk to him? And so I did. And she said it like made his, like he was lit up over it and you know, he just loved it. So I don't even know if I could still do it, but.
Zoinks, Shaggy. No, yeah, see, I got nothing.
Raggy, where's Mr. McMahon? So I don't know. Scooby-Doo to me, probably on my Mount Rushmore of cartoon characters. I loved the character. I loved, you know, I can remember back to childhood and the birthday cake that my mom made with Scooby-Doo on it. And the stuffed animal I had, the color forms. I don't know if you remember color forms, but
yeah.
Move those things around. And then there was another, it was a sheet and it folded out into several sections and it had little stickers and you would scratch them on and create little scenes with them. I can't remember what those were called.
I know what you're talking about. I can't remember. The only thing I can recall is Shrinky Dinks, and I know that's not it.
Yeah, it wasn't the Shrinky Dink, but it was, I wrote a blog about it years ago and I can't even remember what the heck it was called. But anyway, those kinds of things from the childhood. And then the one thing I always, probably my favorite classic Scooby-Doo, Where Are You, was the one where they're at the amusement park and there's a scene where Scooby is tumbling around and he ends up in this cotton candy vat and he's got it all over his face and he licks his tongue and uses it to get all the cotton candy off. And we had these little things. It wasn't the Viewmaster, but it was one that looked like a movie camera and you slid a cartridge in it and you cranked the
sound. Yeah.
And I can still remember going back and forth with that, doing that scene over and over again with that little, that toy. And that, God, that was 40 years ago. but yeah, the nostalgia of it makes the Scooby-Doo WrestleMania mystery, you know, kind of combined your modern day with your childhood and it's fun. It is what it is. So, but I definitely want to check out in future episodes, we'll have to look at some of these other animated offerings from them as well, because I think outside of the Hanna-Barbera, I think they don't they do one of those penguin movies as well.
Yeah. I think it's Surf's Up.
Yeah, that's it. Surf's Up.
Wave of Mania maybe.
Yeah. So we'll definitely get more into some other classic films, or not classic films, but some of the WWE inspired animated films. But I want everyone, if you don't mind, head over to the My 1-2-3 Cents group on Facebook as well. We'll have a poll up by the time this drops with four choices. And let us know. Vote on what you would like us to watch on the next episode. Chad, anything else you want to say as we kind of wrap up this week's Movie Mania?
No, I think, you know, we didn't talk about it earlier, but I think doing Scooby-Doo WrestleMania Mystery at this time was good because WrestleMania is in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And by the time we do the next one, it will be past WrestleMania. So didn't even think about tying it in. No, I'm curious to see what we're going to go for next. And I still think we need to hold out and do Body Slam in June because a new Blu-ray version is being released. And if for anybody who has not seen Body Slam, so yeah, but I don't know. What should we do next month? I guess we'll let the people decide, but we'll go action. Will we go mystery or cartoon again? We throw in the Flintstones Jetson or sequel to WrestleMania Mystery, Speed Race Demons. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what's next.
That's right. We'll put the poll up for April for sure, but in June we'll save that for Body Slam to celebrate the Blu-ray release of that film. Chad, as always, great talking with you. I appreciate you being here, and we will talk again very soon. Thanks everyone for listening.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.